Thanks so much. Wow, it's such a big crowd, and it's a bit daunting and very flattering and a big honor to be here. You know, we've been inspired by hacking, which has been around, 2600, and other hacking things have been around for a very long time, and it's been inspiring to us to see people messing with the system in different ways. And I think it's probably one of the reasons we've ended up doing what we do. And it's only recently dawned on me that what we do is actually hacking. Believe it or not, it took this long. What we do, basically, I think, is hack into mainstream journalism. We work with mainstream journalists, essentially. Maybe it's social engineering. But with their accord, sort of, we give them, most of them, we give an excuse to cover important issues that they wouldn't otherwise cover. Issues that are desperately important to get attention for, like the one that Eric Emanuel mentioned. But we work with them by giving them funny jokes to cover instead of the important issue, because they can't cover the important issue just because it's important. 20th anniversary of the Bhopal catastrophe, biggest industrial disaster, nobody ever compensated for it, site not cleaned up, not important. But fake appearance on the BBC by somebody purporting to be from the company that did that, that's important. It's weird, but that's the way it works. And I think, besides hackers, one of the other things that has inspired me personally has been ACT UP, who, you know, in the 90s did amazing things like covering Jesse Helms' house with a giant condom. And stuff like that, that basically gave the media no choice but to cover it. It was just too good a story. Now, our own kind of voyage into discovering this started in 1999. And if we can have PowerPoint on the screen instead of me. That's 1999. A bunch of people headed to Seattle to protest the WTO, World Trade Organization, and what it represented, which was a system of free trade overall, and an idea that democracies should never interfere with the freedom of commerce to do whatever it wants. Because, you know, we all know if you just let the rich do whatever they want, it'll turn out great for everyone. So this entire organization, a pretty big organization, was created to promote and defend that idea. And a lot of people didn't like it, including these people that you see in the slide and about 30,000 others, who headed to Seattle in November of 1999 to shut down the World Trade Organization. And we couldn't make it to that, so we did the next best thing, or the 10th best thing, which was set up a fake website that looked just like the WTO's real website, but had satirical content, some really offensive content, but basically content that fell within the WTO's basic philosophy. And we did that just because we happened to be playing with websites at the time. I was a tech geek, I was a programmer, and so I, you know, enjoyed playing with technology and was making fake little websites, and somebody actually suggested that we try to make a fake for the WTO, and I thought, why not? Something. A great weird thing happened as a result of this website, though. The WTO itself posted a press release on its website saying that it was terrible. And this was at a time, 23 November, you can see the date there. It was just before these 30,000 people were going to shut down the WTO, and everybody knew it. And the WTO chose to devote a press release to our website instead of them. Nobody noticed their press release, of course. And so the head of their PR agency, being very well-educated in public relations techniques, sent us an email and said, "You terrible people have made us write a press release about you. Don't you feel ashamed of yourselves?" And so we were very ashamed and confessed our sins to about 10,000 journalists on our email list, which made a lot of people laugh. A lot of the journalists found it very funny that the WTO was going after this little website by some people called the Yes Men. And as a result, there was a bit of press on things like the Seattle PI, which no longer exists, covered the issue. And as a result, it got into whatever search engines there were at the time. I think you guys probably remember a lot better than I do. Things with funny names, like Lycos. And as a result, we started getting invitations to speak as the WTO. Because of the search engine, people would stumble onto our fake website and think it was the real thing, and we started getting invitations, as well as a whole lot of other correspondence meant for the WTO. So we were answering really complicated trade questions at the same time, having a lot of fun doing that. The first time we got this email asking for somebody from the WTO to speak at a conference, it took us about 2 months to answer it because it was so weird. And we didn't really imagine we could do it, but we finally accepted. And it was for a law conference in Salzburg, Austria. And we presented a talk as the WTO, in which the WTO basically says, well, okay, we're privatizing most things, and that's great because, you know, we all know democracy shouldn't interfere with business. But there's one thing we haven't privatized yet, and that's democracy itself. So let's try to do that, and we should start with the voting and make it so that instead of corporations paying you know, money to political campaigns, which then pay people to make ads and then pay people to put them on their TV stations, which then are supposed to convince voters to vote for the candidate, incredibly inefficient. It's like the perfect example of inefficiency in government. Let's just have a system, online, website, you know, websites are amazing, and you can have the corporations just pay money directly to citizens to vote for whoever they want. And we had this whole diagram describing this, and people, you know, we kind of expected something dramatic to happen, so we were prepared for anything. We had a cameraman there and the whole thing, and nothing happened. And that was the first of many experiences of nothing happening. The next invitation we got was to a textiles conference in Tampere, Finland. It was a conference on textiles of the future. And so we decided, okay, it wasn't enough to say the most grotesque thing we could imagine. Now we've got to show a pretty grotesque thing. And since Manuel mentioned balls, I'm going to show a little clip that demonstrates what happened there. We you know, we thought, well, what the WTO going to speak at the textiles conference, what is the textiles of the future for the WTO? And the this is the result. It's a textile solution for one of the biggest problems in the world, a world of absolutely free trade. It's that, you know, you can hire people anywhere in the world at whatever wages you want and transport the goods anywhere you want, but the people themselves can't travel. And, you know, that's okay. That's great. There's only one problem with this situation, and this is the problem. Let's see. Do we have sound? Yes.
Okay. So the company might be in New York, Hong Kong, or Espoo, Finland, and the workers are in Gabon, Rangoon, or Estonia. How does the manager maintain proper rapport with the workers, and how does he or she ensure from a distance that workers perform their work in an ethical fashion? I'm about to show you an actual prototype of the WTO solution to two major management problems of today. Now, we all know that not even the best workplace design can help even the most astute manager keep track of workers. What you need is a solution that enables complete rapport with workers, especially when they're located far away. Mike, would you help me a moment? Thank you. Thank you. This is much better, much more comfortable. This is the WTO's answer to two of the major management problems, and we're calling it the management leisure suit. It's the two problems again: how to maintain close rapport with distant workers, and how to remain comfortable and increase leisure activities. How does the management leisure suit work, besides being extremely comfortable, as I can guarantee you? Well, allow me to describe the suit's core features. This is the EVA, the Employee Visualization Appendage. It's an instantly deployable, hip-mounted device with totally hands-free operation that allows the manager to see his employees directly right here. Signals communicating the exact amounts and quality of physical work are transmitted not only visually right here, but directly through electric channels implanted directly into the manager. The workers, for their part, are fitted with corresponding transmitting chips that are implanted humanely directly into the shoulder. But the other equally important achievement of the MLS has to do with leisure. In the United States, leisure, another word for freedom, really, has been decreasing steadily since the 1970s. The management leisure suit permits the manager to reverse this trend by letting him do his work anywhere, while remaining in complete touch with the workers, physically sensing what's going on in the workforce on the floor through channels implanted directly into the manager. Again, the manager sees the employees, but also feels what they're feeling and can select where to focus in the workplace environment. So, in conclusion, I'd like to ask, is this a science fiction scenario? The answer is no. Everything we've seen here, everything we've been talking about, is entirely possible today. We can always look forward on the highways of progress towards ever new horizons with cooperation and mutual delight in the fruits of prosperity. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Afterwards, the president of the conference asked for questions. There weren't any. And we actually spent the entire day with these people and had dinner, and I was seated across from the daughter of the president, and it was completely weird to spend, like, and we went home, and there was absolutely no reaction. But fortunately, we had all this footage, and the local paper did cover a full-page photo of basically that, and describe the WTO demonstrating this technology, and they got it. I mean, that newspaper got it and made fun of it, and it got a certain amount of press. So that was a sort of way that we hacked a bit about that story into the media, remote labor and the inhumanity of outsourcing. Our biggest kind of news hack came a few years later when a friend of ours from Greenpeace suggested that we use these weird talents that we seem to be developing to go after a real on-the-ground problem in Bhopal, India, which Emmanuel alluded to. In 1984, a big chemical plant exploded there, killing like 3,000 people at once, and up to 20,000 people over the ensuing years, 120,000 people sick for life. The maximum anybody ever got for that was $500 compensation, and the site itself was never cleaned up. So we thought that was terrible, of course. And we set up, in 2001, another element of the puzzle, the company that was responsible in 2001 was sold to Dow Chemical. who continued to refuse to do anything about it. So we did what we knew how to do, set up a website for Dow Chemical, a fake Dow website, sent out a press release saying that basically Dow would never compensate the people in Bhopal because the people in Bhopal were too poor to be shareholders. And that's pretty much the truth, and it didn't really get much attention because it's true. So it did get a little bit of attention, though. There were a couple of articles, a couple of blogs posted it, and as a result, it did get into search engines. And 2 years later, an intern at the BBC was searching for the Dow Chemical Company because it was the 20th anniversary of the Bhopal catastrophe, and they wanted to interview somebody from Dow to see how they were responding to these activist demands that they pay up. And the intern stumbled on our site, and the BBC were extremely surprised that we were very happy to go on and say and talk, because Dow never does agree to say anything. And for 6 minutes in front of 350 million people, I was able to basically go on and on and on about how we were accepting full responsibility for the disaster, compensating the survivors, liquidating Union Carbide, which we had bought, and 6 minutes hitting all of my talking points. And they were absolutely thrilled until about 20 minutes later after the broadcast, when they got a call from Union Carbide saying that I didn't exist. A couple funny things happened in that 20 minutes. One was that the stock value of Dow lost about $2 billion. People always applaud for that, and I'm so confused. You should be booing, because it says that if a company does the right thing, they get punished by the marketplace. That's exactly what that demonstrated. And right after the announcement was revealed to be fake, and it was revealed that Dow had absolutely zero intention of doing anything of the sort, the stock value came right back up. Boo. Okay, now you can boo. Good. So that's one of the things that happened. Another is that it quickly shot up to be the number one story on Google News. And after the hoax was revealed, which was about an hour later, that story remained on Google News at the top for the rest of the day. And there were something like 600 articles about the hoax, and therefore about the disaster and Dow's responsibility and so on in the U.S. press. And that was really the whole goal of the action. It was to give journalists an excuse to talk about this incredibly important thing, that somehow just it being the 20th anniversary wasn't enough. So that was so successful, and we only did because of Greenpeace coming to us and saying, why don't you do this? And then they worked with us to craft the points and to make it all happen. So we realized there was a lot of power in working with people who were smarter than us, who knew the issues, who kind of could craft messages and figure it all out. We didn't have to wing it ourselves. We could actually work with people who had done really important research. And so we decided that that's how we would operate from then on. We'd work with organizations directly, first collaboratively, and then we decided we'd work with organizations and actually help them to carry out the projects entirely by themselves with a little bit of advice and a little bit of help. And so we created an organization that we called the Yes Lab. Okay, I've been hacked. Let me see. Can I fix that? Oh, yeah, there it is. Not the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Yes Lab. And this is a little video about the Yes Lab and what it does.
Hi, my name is Mike.
And I'm Andy.
And we are the Yes Men.
Yeah, you may have heard of the Yes Men because of some of the things we've done in the past.
Like this.
Dow is accepting full responsibility for the Bhopal catastrophe.
We want something that's going to be able to save a human being no matter what Mother Nature throws at him. This is the answer.
Iraq war ends. 1.2 million of these fake papers printed and passed out by thousands of volunteers.
Today we're launching Balls Across America.
They serve up satirical humor laced with lunacy to call the media's attention to serious issues. Who are you
with? We are with a group called the Yes Men.
A lot of people see the kind of things we've been doing over the years, and they want to do similar things for their cause.
That's why we started the Yes Lab.
The Yes Lab is a way for us, the Yes Men, to help all kinds of progressive activist groups carry out media-getting creative actions.
Here's how it works. An organization, say US Uncut, calls us up.
They have a goal, say, to point out that GE hasn't paid its taxes.
Together we brainstorm the best way for the organization to get the most press attention possible.
Then, the organization works on the project with our guidance.
Finally, the action works, and the organization gets its ideas out in public.
And this morning, a story crossed the Associated Press saying that General Electric was going to pay back a $3.2 billion tax refund. The stock moved when that story crossed the wires.
It had all the makings of a major news story.
The guys behind the prank, they call themselves U.S. Uncut, who work with grassroots group the Yes Men.
I pay my taxes, why doesn't GE? That's where the impulse came to do this prank.
In its very first year, the Yes Lab helped activist organizations embarrass Canada for their disastrous environmental policy.
The world was laughing at Canada because of a press release.
Demolish Chevron's $80 million greenwashing campaign.
To counter the Chevron spots, an activist group created these spoof ads.
Make the U.S. Chamber of Commerce very angry indeed.
I'm Eric Bolschlegel. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This guy is a fraud. He's lying.
And highlight the health effects of coal plants on children.
The victim of this hoax is Peabody Energy. The website claims it wants to make asthma cool by making their inhalers cool.
The organizations that we've worked with have been very happy with the results, and more importantly, they now know how to do it again themselves.
Now that we know that the Yes Lab can work, we're ready to officially launch.
So if you want to try something, write to us at this address here.
Thanks. One thing we're trying this coming fall, we're working with five New York organizations and a bunch of students at NYU, as well as any of you. So if you want in September to work on some projects that are going to be very fun, like some of the projects that we did last year in the same kind of way, just go to yeslab.org/NYU and you're very welcome to participate. It would be fantastic to get some hackers or hack-friendly people there. So that's one thing. And now I'd like to bring up Mike, who's in Scotland. He has a visa problem for real and can't make it. I'm serious. If he leaves the UK, where he has a wife and children, he can't get back in. So it's a real life problem. And let's see, Mike should be up here on Skype. Mike, are you there? Oh, shit. Wait a second.
Who has summoned me from my internet slumber?
Okay.
It was a fateful day when I was using a magical spell to turn Randall Terry gay. When I was bewitched myself and turned into a meme.
Did you guys set this up?
As a meme, I have special meme powers.
Wait, did you?
The ability to mutate and morph, and others will. The ability to be sliced, have my voice diced, and turned into musical entertainment products. I have been given much in exchange for very little.
How do we get me off the screen?
Who has summoned me? That's life not, okay, in the I'm internet sorry. Is very fast. If you have ever seen
anybody know how to use
Skype?
Ron,
you know exactly what I mean.
This isn't
and yet, I can
number?
See how governments want to slow it down with speed bumps. The super information highway needs more toll booths, traffic cones, rumble steps.
Trash?
Yeah, and right. stuff.
Might be trash.
What's on? What is that on his head?
Why? Why have you brought me here? I want out. Out of the internet.
Just ask the
network personnel.
It's moving too fast. Gingivitis has been eroding the gum line of this great nation long enough and
stand back,
must
let
be
work.
Stopped. I've said that so many times. I'm sick of it. Why do the corporations want to control the information that
Mike?
Just wants to be free? SOPA, I remember the SOPA blackout of January. Oh, stop that. Stop. What are you doing? What are you doing? Stop. Don't make me come out there. Ah!
Well, we got rid of him. Now what about Mike?
Oh! Oh, wow.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yes, welcome.
Thank you. Oh, man.
Great, yeah. Well,
hello, is this one on? Hello? Hello? Ha!
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
Hello. My name is Vermin Supreme, and I am from the internet. I have felt a disturbance in the memosphere. I believe there may be another internet censorship bill coming down the pike. Now, it's so fast on the internet, I can't understand why the governments want to install more roadblocks, traffic cops, traffic cones, rumble strips, and the like. But I have a fear, because to a meme, such internet censorship means life or death. Let me assure you that the Supreme Administration will be friendly to memes and friendly to the internet. We are not afraid of the internet, and we do not believe in internet censorship. Me and my meme friends have recently been discussing the formation of a league of memes. I've been stalking my administration with memes. Scumbag Steve, Double Rainbow Guy, all of them. They're all on board, even the keyboard cat. So friends, I would like to take this opportunity because as you know, during my presidential quest, the next stop will be the conventions in Tampa and the conventions in Charlotte. And I will be arriving en masse, and I will be bringing with me memes. I would like to take this opportunity to announce the Million Meme March for Freedom Against Internet Censorship! Thank you, my fellow digital Americans. So, what can the Yes Labs do for me?
Oh, dear. Mike, what can the Yes Labs do for the Million Meme March? Hello?
Very little, really. It relies on everyone participating and creating their own memes, I guess. I mean, all that we can do is sit back and do it all, whatever we can do as individuals. Personally, I don't know, I'll start with a boot on my head.
A very wise choice.
Yeah, and Mike's absolutely right, Vermin.
Yes?
We can't do anything.
Mike is very scary back there.
Yes.
I'm going to try not to look at him. Don't remind me he's there. Thank you.
Should have seen you. No, but does anybody have any ideas? The ideas, right, you actually want meme ideas, right? For real.
Yes, I'm looking for meme-related ideas to make this Million Meme March the most effective march in the history of all American politics. I want to make it a high-visibility event that will draw attention to this most disturbing issue, because without the Internet, there are no memes. And let's face it, without blatant copyright infringement, I would not be here today. So, any ideas? What can we do, citizens?
Hello, my name is Ambassador Khrushchev. I'm from Soviet Unterzeigersdorf. I came here on a cargo ship. It was longer. My personal, I'm still trying to understand the West, but I very much like your appearance. I like your the PR concept of this Million Meme March. I think, as far as I can tell the capitalist system, sex sells. And I would see memes including fisting and stuff like that.
A million, a sexually explicit Million Meme March.
I mean, yeah, we have to attract deviants.
Yes, well, scumbag Steve
For the mainstream, we take bumblebees.
Bumblebees and fisting.
Bumblebees, fisting, and hope.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I sit down. You can consult me again. See?
Yes.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
So we have bumblebees, fisting, and hope. Are there any other ideas? For viral videos or memes, right?
Viral videos or potential memes in the making. That's very true.
Yeah.
Once again, of course, I am the candidate of no hope, no change, and bitter disappointment. Anybody else? Oh, how can you? Oh, we have a volunteer here. Step right up. Don't be shy. We have a microphone right there for you to tell us stuff. And we look forward to your ideas and suggestions.
Is this thing on?
Yes.
That one, that thing, yes, it is on. Yeah.
Well,
thank you. Thank you for asking. Next question, please.
I think I may have the slogan for the campaign.
Ah, slogan. Every good campaign does, in fact, need a good slogan. What is or would be that slogan?
All their base are belong to us.
All their base belongs to us. I like it. I like it. Can anybody outdo that one? Can anyone have a crappier one? Here we go. Another lucky volunteer. Step right up. Don't be shy. Everybody's a winner.
No internet, no cats.
No internet, no cats. Save the cute kitty cats.
Read me, Dr. Memory.
Yes, sir. You're standing at the microphone.
Yes. I think that, memes should be open source. You know, like wide open, like Goetze.
Okay. just because I'm a meme doesn't mean I get all that internet humor. But I'll nod my head as if I understand exactly what you're talking about.
All right. Those are some really good ideas.
Some fantastic ideas. Those ideas are going to take this baby through the roof.
Yeah, all the way. Now, yeah. Oh. Wonderful.
Could you just shove the microphone in their faces? Like Oprah. Because memes are essential to the American way of life. America would not be the same.
The guy! The lady.
Because this Million Meme March is very important, because the Million Boothead March has too much real possibility of turning to utter chaos at the end with the people throwing their boots
at
the riot cops.
That, but you have a strong Western will. I give you the microphone.
I want to save the memes because they're very important to me and I enjoy them greatly. So maybe you can have like fake people who are look like people from the memes, like save the memes, like you know, like Michael Jackson and all the singers singing, like.
He was very meme-y, yes. Meme impersonators. You're suggesting that we have meme impersonators.
Yeah, like singing, like you know how I can't remember. It's from like all the great singers were from like the 80s. We Are the World Only with Meme. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we are the meme.
And you have like people. Who
we are
like
the internet. And we give you mindless entertainment on your computer at work. How about you? I like that idea. Thank you.
And the keyboard cat died, so you shouldn't, you know, you let him rest in peace. You know.
But he is running for president. I saw the signs.
He's got my vote.
All right.
So, candidate supreme.
Yes, sir. You standing up with the microphone.
Yes. Hi. If we came up with an image rather than a slogan in the past few minutes, how do we give that to you?
I guess you would hashtag it Million Memes.
Million Memes.
Million Memes. Hashtag okay. MILLIONMEMES.
Awesome. Well, on this little drive here, I have the image. Can I share it?
That would be a wonderful thing, young man. Okay, wonderful thing. Any more shills in the audience? We need more shills. Thank you.
I feel like it would go a lot better if you could get the ridiculously photogenic guy to be your spokesman.
Ah, very good. Very good. Okay, well, we'll have our people contact his people. Yes, sir. You there.
Boot man.
Yes, sir.
I defy you. You cannot exist. Memes are an idea. Memes are the people. You cannot... Wait. That's it. We must become the memes. We must take to the streets. Our boots will blot out the sun. We will drape ourselves in red velvet and we shall know our own memeish reality. And they can no longer deny us. They can no longer censor us so long as we are true to our inane and meaningless purpose. But we must find meaning within ourselves, within our memes.
Sir, one does simply not become a meme.
But what have you done, Boot Man? What are you but a meme? What are you when you take the boot off? Are you still a meme?
You got me there. All right, well, we're going to have a technical picture here that's going to be very awesome. I'm sure it's going to be incredible. What is somebody giving me bunny ears or something? What's going on here?
Spam bots are becoming more and more intelligent. And so we have these Turing tests that, you know, let them, you know, we can see they're becoming more and more intelligent. So I propose that their singularity is going to come this year, and we're going to have, you know, self-aware spam bots. So I predict a Ugg Boots Viagra revolution of 2014.
Oh.
Yeah.
Viva la revolution.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Get off my lawn, please. Thank you.
Yes.
You damn kids, get off my lawn. Okay, hi, I'm Weena from the media show.
Weena?
Good to see you guys. You guys are, yes, men are totally my hero. Vermin Supreme, it's nice to meet you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So my meat person here was at Tim Huang's great talk on bots earlier today. And Tim Huang was talking about how governments and advertisers and researchers have all been looking into ways to use bots to influence public opinion. And there's actually a lot of evidence that people will...
You know, I prefer sock puppets.
This is private, and we could. I'm not actually a sock puppet. I don't know what kind of biases you have, but I'm not actually a sock puppet. Okay,
my apologies.
I'm a little bit more complex than that. Thank you. I was born here at Hope.
Didn't mean to apply it. So,
anyway, let's not talk about me. This is not an ad hominem attack. So the bots, people will actually befriend bots online, and they can be used to make a whole conversation more happy or make a whole conversation more angry. And I'm wondering, have the Yes Men done any work to sort of start to think about how to use bots to influence public opinion? I await your response.
Ah, I don't know.
Same here.
Let's work on that. I think that'd be awfully fun. Yeah.
Thank you. Very well.
Cool.
Bot battles. Thanks, public opinion bot battles 3000 coming soon.
I have a recommendation for the chief MC of the Million Meme March. I think that Rick Astley would make a fantastic addition.
He would indeed. He would indeed.
He did the Macy's Parade thing a while ago, so he's still alive, apparently.
How?
Despite having done enough coke to kill several horses.
How would we trick people into seeing him?
Well, all right. So those are some amazing ideas. I promise if you come to the Yes Lab in September, there will not be a Soviet forcing you to have ideas if you're not ready. Okay, we might have a Soviet forcing you to have ideas, but...
Maybe a smaller one.
It will be a smaller group, so it will be less mortifying to be forced to have an idea in front of everybody. And there will also be no fisting. So,
fist fights, maybe.
Well, okay, there will be fisting. Then fine. That's fine. Yay! All right. Yeah, it's a democracy. Yeah. Consensus.
Oh, sorry.
All right. So, with Mike's help back there, also. If there are any questions about any of whatever this is, and about anything so far, about Vermin, about Mike, about the Yes Lab that we're doing, about what we do, how we do it, how this happens, what's going on the screen right now, and off, please feel free to ask. And there's more videos to show you as answers. If we don't have the answers. Communion, I think, is the answer to the first question. Yeah.
I'm not used to this world. Your ways are strange to me.
I'll ask another question, if I may.
Oh, yeah.
As me this time, not as my pub. Yeah. So I know you at least one of you is affiliated with academia somehow, and I'm sort of wondering how you sort of balance out your life as an activist with your life as an academic, and how you keep people from firing you when you do these incredible things.
I will not answer that question because it doesn't apply to me at all. Thank you.
But you're not a doctor of something? Anyway, Mike and Andy, if you want to go ahead and answer.
I can answer that question.
I think that the answer is that you don't keep people from firing you. They do occasionally, but they haven't lately fired Andy, and they haven't fired me ever, because they also sort of like what we do. They're in a kind of tough situation because they want some amount of attention and prestige, and in some circles there is attention and prestige involved with what we do. Also, to our credit, it's to our discredit, we've never actually been arrested for doing the types of things that we do. We've never been charged. We have been sued once, but everybody gets sued. I mean, come on. That's nothing to be afraid of or to think is means that you're doing anything illegal. It doesn't. It just means you're being sued. So I think that, you know, overall, it's, you know, they don't have any reason to fire us. So, I mean, we'd have good grounds to fight it. Although, if you don't show up to work, then they have a very good excuse to fire you. So I recommend that if you are an academic and you're doing things like that, then just, you know, show up to work, teach your classes, and then they probably won't fire you.
I mean, one of the things...
That's my theory.
One of the things I sort of wonder is a lot of us...
It doesn't mean that they... I mean, they've fired plenty of people in the past. They've fired very, you know, very well-known, fantastic activists in the, you know... Frances Fox Bivens is a good example. She was let go from Boston University in around 1980. There's a whole bunch of people who've been fired because of their politics, and so that's why there's the tenure system. Not that that always works.
Well, and that's. But then there's also many of the younger generation of us are having to be adjuncts, where we are much more unstable to begin with, and so. That's a concern. I don't know if you guys want to address that. It's just it feels like we're working on a slightly different terrain.
Well, okay.
Now.
Let me say put it this way then. I think that the risks of being fired are in some ways unknowns. You won't know if you're going to be fired by doing something until you do it. It's a total question mark, and you can't be manage your behavior if you know what you're doing is right based on a climate of fear. It just won't work. Because you'll never know what that limit is, and you'll never know even who your allies are. And if you get fired, the worst thing that happens is that you lose your job, I think. And chances are that the attention that's generated by that will help you get another job. So, unless you basically are like in a really, really, really tough situation personally, I would say that the risks of being fired are very slim compared to the risks of doing what you really need to say and do, yeah. Exercising the freedom of speech.
That's rough in today's economy, but I'll go ahead and take that and get everybody else's way. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Hi, I wonder if you guys ever thought about using economic warfare to go along with media attacks against some of these companies. There's a guy named Max Kaiser who has a website called Karma Bank. And he lists certain companies, for example, Coca-Cola, that are very susceptible to, say, a ban. I noticed you talked about the stock price of some of these companies and how they plummeted in the hours after your press release. If you work with hedge funds who, let's be honest, all they care about is making money, they don't care that you're a progressive group necessarily, they could work with you to really drive that stock price down. If you have a two-hour movement down in a stock price and you have a bunch of hedge funds buying put options at the same time, it builds upon itself.
Hmm.
And I
don't think that any amount of that sort of pressure can really make a difference. I think it could make a momentary difference on one company, but the actual problem is the system that allows companies to get away with murder, literally, and not you know, see their stock value go up as a result. Until we change that, one start would be to get money out of politics, you know, then we would have a lot less of that. And there are different ways to do that. You can get money out of politics, and that makes a real difference across the board, and then companies can't spend billions of dollars. For example, Shell just spent $4 billion lobbying and campaigning to be allowed to drill in the Arctic. You know, that's an example of money in politics. The Arctic is now melted enough that Shell can go drill for oil up there. Wrong response. And that's pretty offensive to a lot of people, including people in government, but because Shell could spend $4 billion on lobbying, they managed to get it approved by the Obama administration. When you can stop that sort of thing, then you can make a real difference. Bringing down one company like Coke, which I'm sure does terrible things, and you know, or any one of these banks that does terrible things, that's great, but one thing that does is send a message that it's just a few bad apples, whereas it's not. It's the entire system.
Yeah, no, that wasn't actually my point. My point was that, like, if you do that to one company, mm-hmm. it sends the message potentially to the other companies, and not all companies are susceptible to what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Some, like you said, it's not going to make
well,
a
that's
difference,
been
but
done.
There potentially are some companies that are more susceptible.
That's something you can test. Like, there have been boycotts that have really hurt certain companies. Has it actually stopped other companies from doing terrible things? No. So it's, you know, to really change things, we have to have systemic legislative changes, like either a constitutional amendment to stop corporate personhoods, to say that corporations don't have the rights of people, which that's a tall order, or even something like an FCC disclaimer on the front of political ads, just like you have, you know, disclaimers on medical ads for pharmaceuticals that say the side effects. Why not have a FCC requirement that if you put on an ad for a campaign or whatever, you have to disclose exactly who's paying for it and who's behind who's paying for it, and, you know, have real clarity about what you're seeing. Right now we don't have that, and that would be really just a palliative measure. It wouldn't fix it, but it would be something. So there are these things that would systematically improve the situation. I think going after individual companies and trying to send them a message is like, you know, it's a bit Christian. It's about like thinking their better sides will win out and the other companies will, you know, do the right thing because they see they're in trouble or whatever. It's not, can't rely on their conscience or even their fear.
I just feel like it's like fighting fire with fire, but thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi, I have a question for Berman. Berman, are you there? Okay. Hey, are you running for president?
Yes.
Awesome.
I'm a friendly fascist,
can
a tyrant that
a
you
video?
Can trust.
Could we perhaps?
And you should.
A debate.
Let me
run. Debate.
Like your right life. I have debated several candidates this election season. Yes.
How about the Democratic debate?
Well, I was involved in the lesser-known candidate debate back in December 19th, 2011. And yes, I won. Thank you. I've also debated Jimmy McMillan, another fine meme who I believe I might be tapping for my VP meme candidate. And I have, also debated Aleister Crowley's representative on Earth earlier in the year, back in October. And I think I won that one, too. Does that answer my question?
Is there a video?
Is there a video?
There are videos of all those debates, yes.
Could we see it?
If you just Google it up. I suggest
now.
I would suggest you type in my name with the name of any other presidential candidate in the past 15 years, and you'll have some fun. Oh, wait.
Oh, Jesus, there is that sensitized from a supreme, help us!
Right back. We can no longer be a nation indentured. Our very salivation is at stake. Together, we must brace ourselves. As we cross over to the bridge work, into the 23rd century, let us bite the bullet and together make America a sea of shining smiles from sea to shiny sea. Now, friends, some people will tell you that this mandatory toothbrushing law is about the secret dental police kicking down your door at 3 a.m. to make sure you've brushed. Friends, it is not. Some will mention the dental reeducation centers or the preventative dental maintenance detention facilities. It's about none of these things. It's not about the government-issued toothpaste containing an addictive yet harmless substance. No, friends, it is not even about DNA gene splicing to create a race of winged monkeys to act as tooth fairies. Friends, what this mandatory toothbrushing law is really about is strong teeth for a strong America. My name is Vermin Supreme. I am a friendly fascist. I am a tyrant that you should trust, and you should let me run your life. because I do know what is best for you. Yes, I'm a politician. I will promise you anything your little electorate heart desires because you are my constituents. You are the informed voting public. And because I have no intention of keeping any promise that I make. Vote early, vote often. Remember, a vote for Vermin Supreme is a vote completely thrown away. I would like to take this moment to acknowledge my mother, who is in the audience here today. Please stand up, mother. Please stand up. If you can stand up, please stand up. She's going to try and stand mother. Up, so you can acknowledge. Thank you.